Midlife Crisis Task Force. It's our 20th episode, and we're discussing women in comics, media, and the movies. Welcome back. All right, everybody, welcome back. This is the 20th episode of the Midlife Crisis Task Force. Can you believe we made it this far?
Woo-hoo!
Yeah. For our 20th anniversary, we decided – 20th anniversary. God damn it. 20th episode.
It's the 20th anniversary, you know.
That's anniversary counts. Of the first one, I suppose.
I guess. Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
As you've already heard, we have some guests tonight. We were going to our first ever guest, actually. We had come up with a topic to discuss women's roles in, like, comics and media and whatever else comes to mind. So being men, we don't know the first thing about women. So
so we caught two of them and locked them in our basement, and we have them wired into the podcast tonight. Right now.
Seriously, can I have a drink of water? Jeez. Save us.
So joining us tonight is Catherine.
Hello.
Also known as Mrs. Poncho. And her twin sister, Elizabeth.
Hey, everybody.
And if that voice sounds familiar, you are probably a subscriber to the Comic Issues podcast. And yes, that is the same person.
Welcome to a different podcast. Yay.
An interesting side note, they're also our only listeners, so this should be probably listened by no one.
I can't imagine that's not the case. Maybe your most faithful listeners. But.
Yes, that sounds we're very dedicated, but I'm sure we're not the only ones.
Well, I don't know.
Well, we're thinking you are.
Because that was the problem with bringing you two on. We were wondering who would actually listen to this show afterwards. So hopefully somebody will. Let us know that they're listening. That would be nice.
The NSA is listening, so don't worry, guys.
Well, there you go.
Yes. Somebody other than the NSA.
Well, I feel kind of bad for the NSA if they're watching my internet feed. I'm just like, God, it's so boring.
I'd be like, how much porn can one man watch? Oh, my God.
I'm sure the NSA operative reviewing mine is saying, you know, there are 53 episodes of My Drunk Kitchen. Is she really going to sit and watch all of them?
Yes, we are.
Yep, absolutely.
I don't know. After review, they'll probably find out that Lefty's named Lefty for a reason.
Bada bing.
Boom.
Bing.
All righty. So, where do we want to start here?
You're done.
Yeah.
I thought you said you're done for a second. I'm like, well, that was a quick podcast. Jeez.
Well, I guess we're talking about women's roles in the media in general, and we're going to go off on a couple of specific areas. But, I mean, I guess we maybe start like what are you ladies' perceptions of women out there in media, in whether it be movies, TV, or – you know, whatever genre you'd like to talk about.
I like it better to have, you know, women's characters when it's really obvious that they're not pandering, you know, when they have the Legos for girls and they're pink, you know, and that's just, you know, without this idea that, you know what, there are women out there who might actually like some of the same things. I mean, Elizabeth and I got into comic books mostly through Transformers, and there's weren't too many women reading that, I don't think, back when we started reading it in the 80s.
And not a lot of female characters in Transformers either. In fact, in the comic, I remember the ones that actually had female Transformers were kind of dumb, but, you know, in the cartoon, that one episode was cool, but, you know.
And
Yeah, exactly. It's like it doesn't have to be tailored just for women. I got a friend who's a beer brewer, and she sent me this article. They're like marketing this specific brand of beer for women, and some of it tastes like flowers. And we're like, there's so much wrong with this idea. There really is. You know? Chances are if we like a particular media or a comic or a movie, we don't necessarily like it because it was made for us. We like it for its own reasons. Don't worry about tailoring it for us. We'll tell you if we hate it.
Mm-hmm. The thing is, they wouldn't do that if there wasn't a subsection of women that didn't jump all over that. I mean, I remember when Catherine and I were going to hockey games regularly, the NHL unveiled a pink jersey for every team to attract more women to the stadium. And where we're like, well, this is crazy. Who the hell wants a pink jersey? And you would be surprised how many of them there were in
I'm
the
sure.
arena.
There is a subset of that, but I always sort of feel like they're sort of hurting the cause, you know, insisting on I don't know, pampering us, I guess, you know, tiptoeing around our delicate sensibilities, crying out loud.
Well, I mean, well, do you think they're just catering to a certain type of woman that would might just like is a casual fan of football that just goes to be seen? Because I've been to baseball games here where I'm at, and you can tell there some women are just going to be seen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
It makes sense.
A lot of that
it does make
hockey
sense.
Arena
yeah.
too.
I guess what bothers me is when you have something that's, you know, let's make it for women, it almost always ends up being, it's like the men's version, only crappier. You know, it's,
yeah.
It's more breakable. It's got, you know, it smells bad for the most part, or it smells strong, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, strong, that sort of thing. And it's an ugly pink color. And, you know, and then, you know, you'll have characters that are introduced to, you know, attract female readership, and they'll be crappy characters and they'll be badly written, but they'll say, but look, they've got boobs, so obviously the women must love them.
You know, well, that's,
just let's keep quality first and foremost in one's mind when creating these things, I guess.
Yes, please.
Well, you gotta have, it has to be created by someone besides a man.
That is important. Yes.
And it's interesting though. I mean, okay, yes. If they're doing something specifically for women, then yes, you do kind of need a woman's input on that. But there are a lot of things that aren't specifically tailored for women that end up getting a huge female readership, like Dave Sims' Cerebus comic that had a huge female readership because it was an awesome comic book. And then he decided that he hated women, and he pretty much drove away, you know, just about all of his female readership. But then, you know, he was doing that on purpose, I think.
Right.
Who knows? Maybe he thought his comic book was sullied by having a female readership. I don't know.
Well, he's crazy cuckoo pants. That's for sure. But
that's a polite way of putting it. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, just because content is targeted towards women, it doesn't have to be created by a woman. I mean, some of my favorite artists and writers of all time are definitely men. So, and I know they're not making something specifically for us women. So,
guess I'm thinking more along the lines of advertising more than anything. Maybe as far as comics, but I mean, you got to look at some of the way the comics, the women characters themselves are drawn.
Right.
Or going like to video games, my, you know, specialty here, that's, you know, you got these supposedly strong female leads, but they're running around half naked.
Right. Sure.
There was there's someone, it's a woman, and I feel bad that I don't know her name, but she had a Kickstarter project going on. She wanted to do a series of kind of little documentaries or exposés talking about females as they're perceived and as they're portrayed in video games. And she had like different kinds of archetypes, I guess. I think one of them, one archetype was the fighting fuck toy or something. I mean, that's, you know, that's a big one right there. You know, damsel in distress. I mean, and these are, and it's interesting because she was a gamer and she wanted to talk about women in games and what's being done and is this right and whatever. Man, she was getting death threats from people. I'm like, seriously, guys? You know, people just didn't want her opinion. They didn't want to hear her, what she had to say, and they don't believe that women can be gamers. I don't have much of an opinion on that because I'm not a gamer, but, you know, props to all the women gamers out there.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, there's women gamers, and a lot of – I think it's like with anything else, there's a lot of posers, too, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, on both sides of this.
On both sides. Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. I just wanted to bring up something real quick, if it's okay. I wanted to get Rando's opinion because you're the anime buff here,
yes.
I guess. What's the role of women there compared to American animation?
There are a lot of archetypes that really translate across all mediums. I mean, you've already hit on a bunch of them. You know, the fighting fuck toy, the damsel in distress, but they also go into the shy, quiet type that, you know, a man would have to try to, you know, convince that, you know, men are not great. You know, he has to win her over, to conquer her own fears of men, perhaps in some way, or she's, the rape object.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. No. Yeah.
No, I mean, you know, it's like, you know, the type of female character who's so disconnected to be nearly schizophrenic and the guy just wants to fuck her to get some sort of reaction out of her. I mean, seriously. I mean, this goes far beyond the pale. Rei Ayanami. I mean, that's a big one right there.
Oh yeah,
she's a colossal archetype for a lot of things.
The victim, basically.
Yeah. Yes, essentially, the victim resigned to her fate. There's a lot of what they call tsundere, which are the nasty bitchy characters who actually underneath all that, it's like a front, and underneath all that, they actually do care, but they don't know how to show it.
Asuka.
Yes, Asuka. Asuka.
Yeah,
from Asuka. Well, maybe a little bit. I think she really does hate Shinji, though.
She really does.
But to be honest, really, Shinji is a pussy.
Yes.
Yeah, he is such a whiner.
Oh my God. Crying every episode. Every episode.
I just rewatched the first episode recently, and I think it was in the first episode. Like, he's looking at the Evangelion, and a piece of the ceiling falls and the robot saves him, and Shinji is still scared of this robot. And I'm like, if it had been me right from the get-go, I'd been like, hey, me and the robot, we're together. We're good. That's fine.
We're best buds now.
We really are. Yeah. But no, he's so whiny.
But then you get the flip side of everything, and they got this thing called, I believe it's Yandere, which are the characters who are so obsessively jealous, that is, that they will turn murderous to get the object of their affection.
Right.
There's a famous video game turned anime called School Days, where one of the characters, I mean, the guy is surrounded by all these women. It's one of these harem things.
Mm.
And the guy is surrounded by a couple of girls. He has sex with both of them. One of them just completely flips out. And one of the game endings is that she kills practically everybody else. But the thing is, you know, I read up on this thing because I was wondering if the anime was anything like the game, which I've never played. You know, everything I know about it is all hearsay and Wikipedia. but basically, it's like people try to get the ending of this video game where she kills the guy because everybody hates this guy. this is a complete dick.
Yeah.
Pancho, wasn't there a review of a really messed up video game that you read ages ago that the reviewer had something hilarious to say about exactly how messed up some of these designers must be?
The website somethingawful.com, I don't know if they still do it, but they used to do a hentai movie review.
Oh, boy.
Oh, my.
A hentai game review.
Oh.
This guy would play a hentai game he had downloaded from somewhere. And he would review it, and he just got this one that was just so over the top crazy. Yeah. And he, his comment was something along the lines of he would like to resurrect the body of Harry Truman. No, excuse me. Let me back up. He wanted to put all of the hentai game developers in one spot, bring Harry Truman back from the dead so he could drop the atomic bomb on them instead of on a city full of non-crazy non-perverts.
Wow. Wow.
That's pretty messed up shit.
Yeah.
They do some really, really messed up shit.
Yes, they do. From Rage Reviews, I believe it, yes.
And I know a lot of people say, oh, well, this comes from a fear of women. I'm like, I don't think the fear is on the guy's side at this point, some of this stuff.
I think it's the anger. There's some anger issues there. I mean, but it sounds like to me, I mean, in general, there's just a lot more – I guess there's a lot more types of characters that are developed in, like, anime than there are in, like, you know, traditional animation. I mean, you know, look at some of the movies now, you see – look at your typical Disney movie.
Right.
You know what I mean?
But with the Disney movie, I mean, 99% of the time, the woman is always the damsel in distress.
Mm-hmm. And usually a princess.
They're kind of moving away from that. I mean, what was it?
Mulan.
Brave.
Brave, yeah. She wasn't. Mulan, she wasn't.
Yeah, but Mulan sucked.
Well, yeah, I know. But they're trying is what I'm saying. I never saw the Princess and the Frog one. I don't know. I'm not sure. Me neither, actually. In fact, it's kind of sort of forgotten about by a whole hell of a lot of people. So anyway, I feel like they're moving away, and I hope they move away from that, because I've said it before. The whole princess thing, the Disney princess, is really kind of creepy. You know, you go into a bookstore and the whole princess display, like a girl's goal in life should always be to be beautiful and happy and get the man and get married and be a princess. S. I'm like, that's just disturbing. Sorry. Right? It's
just really disturbing. Well, I just thought it was kind of interesting to think about that the other day, that they have Disney princesses. They don't really have any Disney queens, though, do they?
No.
Because that would sort of put the woman up into a position of power at that point if she actually became a queen. But no, it's always princess.
Well,
so.
Well, if she is a queen, she's evil, because look at was it Sleeping Beauty?
Yeah, Sleeping Beauty and Snow White.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, even the Rescuers, the woman was, well, wasn't a queen, but she was all gnarly and evil.
She was a woman in power. It's like older women are evil in the Disney universe.
Yeah, they really are older. I was just thinking Ursula
like
is a great example of that.
Yeah, Cruella DeVille. Perfect one.
Wow. Yeah. So you're only good as long as you're young and pretty. As soon as you get old and powerful, then you must be evil. Mm.
Yeah.
Thanks, Disney.
Or you have to die. You know, how many Disney movies have the mother be the dead character?
Exactly. That's the only way that you can stay good is if you die first.
Mm. Before you get old.
Yes, exactly.
Even in Bambi.
Yeah.
I know there has to be some. Is there any Disney movies where the main character has both their parents?
Both their parents?
Both their parents, mother and father.
I can't think of one offhand.
Was The Incredibles Disney?
That was Pixar.
Yeah.
That's produced, so that may be the one.
That's the only one
there.
I can think of. Yeah, exactly. Well, and that's another good one where the female characters weren't damsels in distresses, you know. In fact, they were very much determined, which is a fantastic movie. So yay for them for another reason.
Again, but Mrs. Rando was pointing out they fell into some trappings of the woman being the vain type of character as well. And the bit where Elastigirl, as a mother, checks her ass out in the mirror and is like, oh God, you know.
Oh yeah, but that's just being realistic. That's, you know, there's certain stereotypes about women that hold more true than others. And yeah, we do want to try and look nice, but I could argue that that's because society says we have to.
All righty. Well, we all know Disney has problems with their, their female characters.
Any luck, they're getting better though.
Yeah. Well, we can hope. They have nowhere to go but up, to be honest.
That's true.
So what else we want to discuss?
I'm thinking about we were going back, staying on the movies again just for one more quick segment. As far as like, I don't know, the typical woman, like in a horror movie or something, or like a sci-fi movie, how they're always like running away and tripping and falling, or they're just ditzes. You know what I mean? There's not a lot of yeah, right. There's not a lot of strong women leads in movies. I mean,
it totally depends on the movie, but.
And it seems like a lot of cases, if there is a strong woman character, like say Sarah Connor in the Terminator movies, it's because she's damaged. So,
Ellen Ripley from the Aliens, probably the only exception to that.
I'm sure there's other, what movies have I seen? Yeah, it's funny, in the most recent Iron Man movie, they did a good job for a while at making, I thought, Pepper into a stronger character, but I don't want to spoil it for anybody who hasn't seen the movie yet, but I think they went too far, and it's like Catherine had said earlier, it seemed like it was pandering. It's like, oh my God, look at how strong we made this female character. I'm like, yeah, but no, it's dumb, so whatever.
I'm trying to think of a couple of, like, Resident Evil. I'm not talking about whether the movies are good or not. I'm just talking about the leads of the women.
Well, you've got Black Widow in Avengers, but once again, I mean, she's this incredibly strong character, but she got the idea that she was pretty damaged, too. So,
yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, yeah.
And, of course, you've got...
I was saying, what about Leeloo in The Fifth Element?
Same. Damaged.
Yeah, damaged, but had a good heart, though. You know,
the thing is, was she damaged or not? I mean, she was genetically engineered.
She was alien, I guess. Sort of a sidestep from human, I guess.
Well, think at the very end of that film when she gets exposed to all that information about human history, and then suddenly she's just helpless, and Bruce Willis has to like pull her back from the abyss, you know.
Yeah, yeah. He has to save her.
Yeah.
In the most recent Star Trek movies, Uhura mostly seems to be a character just to play off of Spock. I don't know that as a character herself, she has some strong moments, but well, in the most recent movie, maybe she does have a few more strong movements.
That's a good character to talk about as far as the evolution of female characters in science fiction. I mean, Uhura in the original series and in the movies too was basically just the Tolkien woman.
She didn't
really have a huge role. She didn't do a lot,
which really tells you the evolution of women characters, period, in that her position on board the space station was a step up from what they'd had before.
Yeah.
Exactly. I was just going to say, it was, the 1960s when it first came out. We definitely saw that evolving, and she was an incredibly popular character. And wasn't she the first interracial kiss on television?
She also got to show off a bit more, not just in terms of skin, but more in terms of character in the Mirror Mirror story.
Yes,
she actually got to be part of the away team. She got to be part of the action.
Yeah, and it was fun in the 60s. They weren't afraid before that, before the 60s. I mean, they were afraid to show sexuality in women on television. It was, June Cleaver or whatever, and everybody was all nice. And if you were really sexy, you were probably the bad girl. But, she got to be sexy in a way that she was definitely the good guy. So it was fun.
How long was the separate bed syndrome going on?
How long did that go on? Did anyone ever actually have that back in the 50s?
Mom's parents did,
My grandparents.
Go and visit them.
Beds.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That's hard to imagine.
Yeah.
Think of the it as a TV invention.
We had like little beds when we were kids, and then mom and dad got us like, actual like grown up beds, but they were hand me downs from grandma and granddad, new mattresses, but that was their single beds. And I'm like, wow.
But you compare the role Nichelle Nichols had as Uhura versus the role Zoe Saldana has in the reboot of Star Trek. Uhura is a much stronger character, much more well rounded character. She's actually allowed to have, romantic scenes with Spock, which never would have happened in the original series. I mean, even if the times would have allowed it back then, I don't think it would have happened.
That's kind of interesting you say that, because I remember first hearing that Uhura, was involved with the first interracial kiss on television, and I thought it was with Spock, and I was disappointed to find out it was actually with Kirk, because that just didn't do anything for me at all.
Not at all. And in the newest movie, which I don't know if you guys have seen yet, I was just about to say that I'm like, but she didn't really have all that much to do in the new movie. She had like one really big scene and then not a lot else. But then I thought about it. I'm like, actually, the character playing Sulu and Scotty didn't really have a hell of a lot to do in the movie either. So it was very much a Spock and Kirk and Benedict Cumberbatch movie. So.
Yes.
Yeah. Which I'm not completely opposed to. That's totally.
I just think it's interesting. If you watched now, I've watched a lot of like sci-fi movies from the 50s and stuff, and the attitude towards the women characters there, because they're usually they're scientists sometimes, or they're, whatever, but they're always, the guys are always, oh, that's cute here. That's cute, but you'll marry me and settle down and forget all about that science stuff,
Even when it's two scientists, like in This Island Earth, I mean, she's treated like a complete, it's like she should be in the kitchen.
Exactly.
And she's a colleague, but yet she's still the woman.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's exactly. Goes to one of our little topics here was, are the women's roles changing? And when they do have a tougher woman character, are they basically men in a skirt?
Mm. Right. It's funny that I saw somebody on DeviantArt posted the other day, and it was a woman, very traditionally minded, and she felt that a lot of the women's rights movement has been harmful to women. Now, I'm just going to go ahead and say for the record right now, I don't believe in any of the crap she was putting down there, but she was saying that women being comfortable in their sexuality was something that men did to them because men wanted women to be more sexual. So they turned women promiscuous and, being tough and being strong. It's because men were threatened by women's femininity and they didn't like that. So they wanted them to be more like men. I believe that's all bullshit, but
I'm
to
sorry.
Each their
that,
own opinion. Yeah.
That's crazy.
I'm sorry. That just goes to the whole. That to me is more of a victim mentality than anything. Yes. It's this idea that if things are not exactly the way I think they need to be for me and my gender, it's men's fault. You've come up with a solid reason. You've got an enemy to fight against and a solid reason to never really succeed because there's always someone else's fault. And I just don't buy into that.
And I certainly don't buy the idea that if a woman is strong, that means she's more like a man. I'm like, whoa, back up there. Back that shit off. But yeah, well, it's interesting. I think, well, what are some modern day, because I was thinking, you know, have women come far in movies, and I'm like, it depends on what you're looking at. You know, if you're looking at an action adventure movie, probably yeah. If you're looking at a James Bond movie, not so much, you know.
No.
James Bond is perpetually in the back in the 60s, I think.
Yeah.
Although
yeah,
the one with Michelle Yeoh.
Which one was that?
Yeah.
The world is not enough.
The world is not enough. Yes.
She actually played. I mean, you had the typical Bond type character. That was.
Terry Hatcher.
Thank you, Terry Hatcher. But you had Michelle Yeoh, who actually played a real foil. I mean, they pandered at the very end. But up until then, she was an actual foil for James. I thought that was great.
And almost an equal as well.
Yeah.
Almost an equal to James Bond. So
I haven't seen have you guys seen Skyfall yet? I haven't seen Skyfall.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Enjoyed that.
Is it good? Okay, good. I'll have to see it.
Well, if I tell you my opinion of it, I'm going to ruin it for you. So I'm going to.
Okay. Well, we'll have another discussion about this. It's one of my many movies I have to catch up on. I still haven't seen the new Superman movie either.
No, we haven't either. The more I hear about it, the less interested I am too.
Well, that's funny that you were, you know, we talked on our other podcast about how the fact that Jimmy Olsen is now Jenny Olsen in the movie.
We talked about that here as well.
Okay. So Anthony had said something like, you know, well, before, you know, Jimmy Olsen was friends with Superman. He was a buddy and everything. But she make it into a woman, and now that turns into more like she's obsessed with him. I'm like, whoa, hold up. What kind of women do you hang out with? Jeez. just because it's a woman, she's got to be obsessed. But I'm curious to see. And Anthony did go see it, and he did like it. So apparently it didn't bother him that much. So I don't know.
We were more of the opinion of you already had the, you know, when you think of the classic universe, you already had Lois Lane and Lana Lang. Was there really a need to change an established character in the canon just because you could?
Well, I don't know. It depends because Lois doesn't seem to exist other than to, I don't know, her whole existence is around Superman. If Superman's not there, Lois doesn't seem to have much of a point.
True, but in a way, Lois is kind of an insult, really, because she's supposed to be this investigative reporter, but she can't figure out that Superman's just a dude with glasses who sits next to her. They make her out to be kind of a twit, really.
Yeah, and
she's basically
right there.
Right, well, and she's always getting herself
Robin.
Yes,
she's basically Robin.
Yeah.
She always
just doesn't dress up in a suit and go out fighting crime with Superman.
She has to be rescued.
Yes.
Thank you. Yeah, she's always, hostage. But she's deliberately going into situations where she's going to have to get rescued.
Well, she's plucky that way.
Or stupid. Either way,
it's a fine line between the two.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's another imply dearth of brains there. I think so. When you
there's. There's something that I heard of recently, and it's called the women in fridge syndrome or women in refrigerator syndrome. And I believe, and anybody who reads the comics is probably yelling at me right now, I believe it was Green Lantern, and his girlfriend was, I believe, murdered, and then the body was stuffed in a fridge for him to find later. But it sort of brought up this dialogue between people who were talking about how a lot of times in comics – the women who have relationships with the superheroes, it's their job to either be rescued or get very messily killed so the main character can have character development. And with the new Injustice game, the DC video game that came out recently, for anybody who doesn't know, Superman, right in the very beginning, this is everybody, I don't think this even counts as a spoiler because they sort of told this when they were introducing the game, Lois Lane gets killed and it kind of sets Superman right over the edge. And they're like, once again, you know, in order to make the character develop, they killed the woman who had a relationship with him. I'm like, interesting.
They sort of did that with Captain America. I mean, they implied that they killed Sharon Carter, but then they brought her back.
Right.
But he also had a girlfriend who was, I can't remember if she was a reporter or like a legal consultant or something, Bernadette Rosenthal. She ended up breaking up with Steve Rogers, but they remained friends, but nothing really, I mean, she got into a couple of scrapes, but nothing really nasty happened to her. I mean, she didn't wind up dead on his doorstep or anything.
Well, that's good. That's a plus. And I honestly can't think of any other examples at this point where that's happened. I'm sure there's been.
Yeah, I can actually. Daredevil.
Yeah, I was thinking that.
Electra. Yeah,
well, Electra.
I wasn't even thinking Electra.
There was another person he was married to before that, I think, and she got killed off.
Spider-Man and Gwen Stacy.
Yeah, not to mention Frank Castle.
Yeah, and his whole family
got killed. Oh, yeah, exactly. So, yeah, somebody was saying that it's I don't know. I mean, it's something that we accept, but maybe we should look at, do we have to have female characters just to have them killed off so that everybody else can grow as a character? I mean, maybe we're using that as a crutch at this point. I don't know.
All right,
can you think of a situation where a female hero had her male counterpart killed or beaten
I'm
up?
Sure, that's happened.
Terminator. Sure. We keep going back to Sarah Connor.
Yeah, true.
That's true.
Oh, yeah,
you have the best example of that.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's something else.
Other female characters that go on a rampage or swear to get revenge for their murdered lover, husband, something like that.
Kill Bill.
Actually,
she didn't actually love him. It was all about the child, though.
Right, but I mean, she was still, you know.
She was out for blood, though, after what they did to her, yeah.
You could sort of say the same thing about Ellen Ripley in the second Alien film. She was out to protect that child.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was, and also possibly. But maybe that's the other thing. I mean, if it's a guy, in order to make the character develop, you kill off his wife. If it's a woman, in order to make the character develop, you have her protect a child.
Or you have her be sexually assaulted.
Or that. I hear that's the new Lara Croft that's coming out. That's what they did. They've added rape to her backstory.
Oh, crying out loud.
Oh, for God's sake. I haven't played it yet, so I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, and that's like, it's, I don't know, you want to, for good storytelling, yes, it does happen, and sometimes it can be used in the story, but I don't want that to be a crutch either. I mean, she's a woman, she's out for revenge. What happened to her? She got raped. Again?
Yeah.
Well, what was that collection, Elizabeth, that you had in college? You actually were part of a women in science fiction or women in fantasy class, and there was a collection of short stories that actually was entertaining, but, you know, it was all women writers writing about women characters. And what was it, like 90% of the characters had been sexually assaulted at some point,
absolutely,
and that was part of their story?
It's the Sword and Sorceress series. I believe it's Marion Zimmer Bradley. And there are some wonderful stories. The whole thing is she wanted to have books of fantasy short stories written by women about women. She actually has some stories in there that were written by men. They're good. There's some great stories, but yeah, the number of times that a character, the female character, what pushes her to do whatever it is she's going to do is because she got raped. I'm like, well, that's not the only way that a woman can grow, you know? So,
Suddenly this podcast took a dark turn.
Yeah,
that happens occasionally. Let's try to find something a little more.
Okay,
lighter and happier and fluffier with puppies and kittens. Oh my gosh.
Rainbows, yes.
Has anybody read the book Howl's Moving Castle?
No, I have.
That was a very interesting character development with Sophie, I think. Mm-hmm. When you got to the end of the book and they resolve the arc with Sophie and what happens to her, how it's like, you know, yeah, I was trying to do something for you, but it just never worked. I figured you just wanted to be that way.
Interesting.
I need to reread that because the biggest thing that kept occurring to me as I was reading the book was, this is nothing like the movie. I have to get past that stumbling block.
The movie and the book, for those who don't know, there was a movie adapted by Hayao Miyazaki and Studio Ghibli based on the book. What's her name? Diana Wynne Jones or something? She wrote the original work, Howl's Moving Castle. It's a fantasy work. It's a lovely story aimed at youth, and it's a great read. I mean, even, you know, as an adult, I can enjoy this, and it's really, really good. It involves a woman, a young woman named Sophie, who is cursed, quote unquote, to look and become an elderly woman. And it's a story about how she meets up with this wizard named Howl, who has a castle that is mobile. And her adventures with the wizard Howl, who is supposed to be, who was revered as this evil thing. And he's just this little quirky dude. And, there's some interesting twists, especially in terms of development of her character. It takes some turns that I don't think are the usual types of turns. And I really got to hand it to this woman for writing that type of character. But the book and the movie draw a line between the two. They're both really their own things.
Yeah, got it.
The movie draws on characters and situations, but it kind of gets a little preachy at the end. But the book is thoroughly enjoyable, and I highly recommend it.
Miyazaki does great female characters. He really does.
Yeah, he does.
Elizabeth, you really need to watch that at some point. I think the dubbed version that you listened to, you thought was pretty horrible. I thought it was much better.
I saw it in the theater, and I can't – now, it wasn't like Princess Mononoke. I mean, Neil Gaiman wrote the English screenplay for Princess Mononoke, which is why it's so
good. Another guy who does good female characters.
Fantastic female characters.
I just started reading The Ocean at the End of the Lane, and it's wonderful. It's so neat. I love it. The thing I remember most about Howl's Moving Castle, it was a long time ago that I saw it, but I just remember Christian Bale did the voice of Howl. It is the most wrong choice of voice for the character. Just as soon as he started talking, me and my friend who were watching, we're like, oh my, really? God. It's just, as soon as he opens his mouth, you're like, wrong voice. Absolutely. And the best thing though was, what's the little flame guy? What's his name?
Calcifer.
Calcifer.
Billy Crystal does Calcifer and does such a wonderful job. It's really good. That's the only thing that's good about the English version, I'll say there.
Well, you know, being Billy Crystal, he's Billy Crystal doing Billy Crystal doing Calcifer.
Yes.
So you're either going to love it or you're going to hate it. There's no in between. It's just like a Terry Gilliam film. There's just no in between.
That's very true.
All right, going back on topic here, this brings up an interesting thing. In anime, there are a lot of different types of strong female leads.
Right.
One of the most iconic is Motoko Kusanagi from the Ghost in the Shell series.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
And she's a very interesting and diverse character, despite the fact that she is a cyborg whose only remaining organic part really is her brain. Right. She has a completely artificial body, and she has to cope with that. And I've seen her in two different movies, in two different television shows, an OVA, and now they're reimagining the character as a completely different series called Ghost in the Shell Arise. But she's also another type of character. She's very, very strong. She's very, very self-assured. She's not the fuck toy. She's like the desirable yet unattainable woman.
Right.
I never got the sense from Ghost in the Shell that she was damaged either. I mean, obviously she went through a very radical change to become a cyborg, but I didn't ever get the sense that she was like, oh, I was attacked. I lost my child, you know, something like that. It was just, you know, I wanted to be stronger.
And they they tried to explain it away in Second Gig, which was the second season of the TV show, in that when she was a child, she was involved in a horrible accident that destroyed most of her body, and her brain was transplanted into a cyborg body, and she had to grow up being a cyborg with a completely artificial body.
So by the time we meet her, this is something she's used to. She's come to terms with this long before we ever meet the character.
Exactly. So they try to do that, but then you've got the flip side of it. You've got like characters like Belle Dandy, who are meant to portray the ideal wife type of thing.
Oh God, yeah.
And then
that's a beautiful manga, but that's not the best portrayal of women I ever felt.
No, it's not, really. But there are all sorts of things in between, but so many of them have very, very, very strong female characters to one extent or another. They're either physically strong, they're mentally strong, they have a strong will, or they evoke strong emotion in others.
Right.
But they're still very, very strong characters. But that, you know, Japan is still a very male-dominated society. And from a sociological standpoint, I can't help but wonder, you know, you constantly feed and reinforce this type of strong female character to the younger and younger and younger generations. Sociologically, you know, in the next 50 years, what will that society evolve into?
It's going to be interesting to watch.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, to see that.
Well, I got now this is going to be a totally different area as far as media, but I just was thinking about something. You want to talk about women being portrayed in a certain way? Let's look at just for a couple of minutes, pop music.
Oh boy!
Oh boy!
Oh dear! Yeah.
And the way that women, and I will say in some cases girls, and the way some girls and women are portrayed mm-hmm. by basically, I would just say by the record companies and how they're being promoted, and then you have to steer off into the fact where when they start doing the shit on their own and start sending out these bad messages. What do you two think about that?
I hate most of Keisha's songs with a fiery hot passion. And the one about like we're gonna die young, I think is the song, and it's like, you know, what a shame that you came here with someone. And the whole song is about her, you know, getting it on and flirting, you know, with somebody that, oh, isn't it a shame that you've already got somebody that you're with, but let's have fun anyway. And I hate that, you know, that idea that, you know, we just, because we have this attraction, this gives us this kind of pass on anything else that we've committed to in our lives. So, and I think that's leading to a lot of problems. And this isn't a problem about people being promiscuous. This is just a problem with people deciding that what they feel at the moment is the only thing that actually really matters.
Right. So. Right. But you contrast that. Who does the song, We're Never Getting Back Together? Who the hell does that? Does anybody remember?
Is that Taylor Swift? I think it's Taylor Swift.
That really does sound like a Taylor Swift song.
I'm actually Googling it right now.
With your boyfriend, it's probably Taylor Swift.
Yeah, I'm going just by the title.
Basically, with Taylor Swift's history, it sounds like all of her exes should get together and write a group song called Maybe It's You.
Absolutely. She said something. I mean, this is Taylor Swift. She is the one who writes all these songs about her exes, right? And they're all, on the one hand, you're like, well, you know, we've all had bad relationships and she's moved on from them and yay, that's great. But oh my God, there seem to be just so many. And I'm like, is that what your life is about? Getting over bad exes? That's kind of a shame. You don't want to talk about anything else? You
know? I think that's what her record producers think will sell albums.
Right.
To think any of these artists have any kind of integrity or any kind of really input into their music, I think is fooling themselves. They might have their name on the credits.
Right. Right. Well, how many songs in the top 40 by women are about anything else other than loving someone or hating someone or getting over someone? Perfect Circle has all these songs about like his mother dying, I think, feeling crazy. You know, they're exploring other realms of human emotion, but it seems like if it's a famous woman singing, then she's singing about some dude, you know?
Yeah, who's done the top 40 song, Brave? Shoot. I can't even think of what her name is right now. Mm-hmm. That's a little bit more of the empowerment kind of song. And I like that one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I do like those. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing, though. I mean, it's the lyrics and everything, and plus the image. To me, I just think it's interesting, the images that are portrayed by women. It's not changed in the last
ever
25, 30 years. Yeah. Well, I mean, as far as music goes, you know what I mean? I mean, I think things were different. I mean, women were still exploited, don't get me wrong, but women weren't running around half naked in the 50s and 60s.
maybe in the 60s.
Yeah, but you know what I mean, as far as being promoted by record companies.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just talking about on the bigger picture like that. I mean, you know, nobody ever saw Leslie Gore running around with a friggin', you know.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I think the difference nowadays is I think the women are the singers themselves. I mean, everybody's getting manipulated, but I think the women are slightly more in control of themselves and their finances, whereas before they were definitely being handled by, you know, some dude. Not all the time. There are exceptions to all these rules, of course, but I think the women singers that are out now are, and maybe they're not always singing about it, but they seem to be stronger people. They can also be just as fucked up as everybody else, though. I mean, my God, poor Britney.
Melissa Marr, yeah.
Oh, God, yes. Well, I have to wonder. I mean, what you were talking about women, you know, running around half clothed. I remember our younger sister commenting about teaching a summer program up in the mountains and saying, "We've got these 12-year-old girls that are dressing like prostitutes." And sometimes I have to wonder if it's. Now, Elizabeth, do you remember having a whole lot of disposable income when you and I were younger?
Oh, hell no. I mean, I remember us getting an allowance, and it was like, oh, you know, in like, oh, third and fourth grade, an allowance was something we'd be able to get ice cream on ice cream day, you know?
Yeah. Certainly not. And I wonder, because it seems like, you know, every time I talk to people who have kids, and the kids are getting a lot of stuff, and they're getting a lot of money to, you know, be able to fool around with. And then, you know, you see these songs and the clothes and everything. And it's all being directed at these children who now have the cash in order to splurge on what they think is important. And I just have to wonder how much of that is having an effect. Because, of course, you know, you can say, oh, these record companies, they shouldn't be, you know, trying to market all this stuff. I'm like, yeah, they're going for what sells every
Absolutely.
Time. Every
Of course they do.
The dollar is the bottom line.
Honestly, I mean, maybe I'm naive. I don't think there's this overarching conspiracy to portray women as weak or something like that. I think they're just going with what sells.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
Okay.
Well, true, but the fact that it does sell, I think, is a reflection on the parenting that's going on.
Yeah.
That could very well be it, too. Yeah.
Well, when you get the parents that are listening to the same crap as their kids are, wrong.
I think parents, I don't know, it just seems like there are a lot of parents who want to be their kids' friends rather than their parents.
Yeah. Right.
And since I don't know that, we didn't have that growing up. No.
And since I don't have any kids, I'm never going to judge how somebody parents their children. However, I will say that, you know, I've got friends. I certainly have friends who are teachers who work with children all the time, and they see that this has been going on for at least the past 20 years, probably longer than that, but that parents want the teachers to be solely responsible for any kind of discipline and any kind of, like, you know, learning experience.
Yes,
and you're like, yeah, you got it.
So you get that, and then the parent, and then the teacher does try to discipline it, and then the parents lose their shit and say, not my child, and then they sue the fucking school.
Exactly.
And that is something that we ran into when all of us went out to see which movie was it? It was the second X-Men movie.
I've told this story here before about us going into the theater and about three dozen middle school kids coming in
The manager's hands were tied because he said the parents absolutely do come after them if they say anything stern to any of their, you know, perfect little angels for getting up and running around. And it's, I don't know. You guys have talked about that, about how your parents absolutely would not have stood for that sort of, you know, you coming back, oh, they kicked me out. And we're like, well, what were you doing to get kicked out?
Exactly.
And Elizabeth, can you imagine how mom and dad would have reacted if we had come home with the story that we had been rambunctious and gotten ourselves thrown out of a movie theater? I don't think we would have told them.
No, we would have been too embarrassed.
Sure, that would have happened. Yeah.
No, we would. I mean, I could just imagine Dad's reaction. Holy cow! He would have been on the manager's side right from the get-go. He probably would have even called the manager to apologize. So, don't worry, they're grounded forever.
Well, I wanted to bring up something that Elizabeth and her cohorts over at Comic Issues spent a whole episode on. On their podcast one time, it was about a year ago, there was a big brouhaha in the comic world about this guy came out with this essay basically telling how much he hated Booth Girls.
Yeah.
And you know more about this than I do, Elizabeth, so why don't you just give an overview of what?
Well, I wish I remembered all the names of the people. Joe Peacock had written the original blog about fake geek girls, and he just really went off, and it was – I don't want to paraphrase him too much, but really the idea of a woman going to Comic-Con dressed in a skimpy costume, she had better damn well be a real geek, or else she's a fake geek and she's ruining Comic-Con. And it's so hateful. And but the funny thing is there are a lot of geek guys that are very protective of their comic world. And yes, I see the pictures sometimes of these girls, and they're very, very pretty, and they've got, like, the big glasses on. They're like, oh, haha, I'm a geek and everything, because geek is kind of sexy right now. I see that. No, they probably don't know anything about geek culture and everything, but I've always been of the idea whatever, ignore them and they'll go away, literally. I don't understand the hate that comes around. And then I was reading the Batman Death of the Family series recently. And in the beginning of each of those books, there is a little panel, and it's something that DC's running, and it's called the most hated figures in geek culture. And it's like one is like this jock kind of guy, and one is this girl. She's like the fake geek girl and everything. I'm like, what is DC doing promoting hate? Why are we doing this? Why are we spending advertising space to promote, oh, how much we hate these people? I'm like, I don't know.
And when it gets down to the fake geek girl thing, what really infuriated me is this idea that, you know, you will actually have geek guys coming up to women dressed in costume and start grilling them on the character that they're portraying with this idea that, oh, you're just dressing up because, you know, you just think it's cool. You're not a real fan. This sort of thing isn't directed at guys. You really don't have a whole lot of this, spot on. You have to answer every single question about this character or you don't count as a real fan. So it definitely seems to be more of a, this is our clubhouse, no girls allowed, than it is a real, you know, oh, well, we're just trying to maintain the integrity of the fandom, you see.
Right. And it's like I said in the podcast that, you know, some of these women who do come to Comic-Con and get dressed up, some of them are professionals and they're promoting their modeling career and everything. And Joe Peacock was talking about these women like they were horrible and they were just, you know, very disparaging of men. And they were just, you know, I don't know, being condescending to these guys because they would never actually give them the time of day. But it was so much like hate them because they're pretty and they don't like geek stuff. And I'm like, you know what? If they actually do something to you, then, you know, feel however you're going to feel. That's fine. But he would just hate them on principle. They wouldn't have to do anything. He would just assume that they were going to. Well, that's no way to live.
It sounds more like, you know, they're geek girls and they don't like me.
That's all that is.
If you go back and find the original article, it's really, really bitter. And he just props to him on this realm, though. He never did back off from it because a lot of people having the internet jump on him like the internet proceeded to do, they would immediately backpedal and take it all back. He never really did, and he didn't get too unpleasant about it, but he really does believe that, and so he stood by his opinion. So I respect him for that. I don't agree with him at all, but, you know, it's – but then it was followed up by a particular artist in the field whose name – I'm sorry, I don't remember, but he was the one – it was several months later, and he was talking about not necessarily – well, maybe Booth Babes, but it was really just cosplayer and cosplayer women. And he didn't like them. He thought they would distract attention from the artists, thought they were disrespectful. He just had a real mad on for girls who dress in costume at Comic-Cons.
Aren't the booth babes paid?
Yeah, seriously. Yeah.
I mean, but aren't the booth babes just paid by the companies to just stand there and be pretty all day?
It's true. That's one of the things that Joe Peacock did back off. He was using booth babes as a generic term to cover anybody who was dressed up. But what he really meant was either the women who are paid by the company to parade around. And yeah, sure, that's kind of distasteful. But, you know, once again, it sells. And
yeah, I mean, the target audience you're looking at is still young men. And they're going to be attracted to a pretty woman in a skimpy outfit. So if you want people to come to look – come to your booth and maybe buy your merchandise, you know, it makes sense to pay this woman to dress up like
Poison Ivy. And they're getting paid.
It would work on me.
Exactly. They're getting paid or the modeling career, you know, it's fine. But that's the other thing was, is that all the hate was directed at these women. And he would talk about, you know, hey, listen up, chicks, you know, you're only dressing up so you can have these, you know, grown men with 13-year-old minds ogle you and drool all over you and be. And but yet he was not really going after the men with, you know, 13-year-old brains ogling these. I have seen some creepy, creepy dudes at Comic-Con, like out and out leering at these women. I don't think just because a woman is dressed skimpy, I mean, yeah, you probably don't want to walk into a bad area of town, but it doesn't give the guys a right to be a dick.
So. No, not at all. It doesn't. Yeah, I mean, there's a little bit of decorum you got to have, but you got to look at that audience there. There are a bunch of kids, young men, old men ain't getting laid to begin with. Yep. Let's just call it for what it is.
Yeah. I would say it's on both sides of the line.
If you're going to dress skimpy, you should expect to be ogled. Now, that's another thing. But if you're going to show it off, you can't say that you're going to get offended if somebody looks at the merchandise.
I'm not sure that there's anyone out there that's mad about getting looked at. I think, you know, getting followed around and harassed and, you know, that bizarre situation where there was some company that was making those creepy body pillows. With pictures on them, and they were getting cosplayers to come in and get their photo taken, and then without asking permission, they were turning those photos into the full body pillows, which they were then selling to people at the convention. And that's just full on creepy.
And stupid too. Did they think nobody was going to notice?
And I think they said that it was because, you know, we're providing a service and your picture is available to us afterwards. And I don't think they ever backed off on the league. Well, they decided they wouldn't do it anymore, I guess, because of the bad press. I don't think they ever backed off on the idea that it was legal. I think they thought that they were perfectly legally justified in doing it. And I don't ever saw any admission from them that it was creepy as all get out to do that to somebody.
Yeah.
So that just didn't even come into the consideration. I mean, this whole mentality of we're shocked that people would actually have a problem with this.
Well, there's also if there's money involved, kind of morals get thrown out the window anyway. Yeah.
Okay, all right. I have a question for you ladies. Do you know, or do you care to admit, do you know any women who are attracted to stories featuring homosexual male characters?
You know what? The funny thing is
talking
about objectifying women. I'm flipping the argument around about objectifying
absolutely.
Men.
Okay, I do read a bit of fan fiction, and by a bit, I mean kind of a lot. And you know, the thing is, there are all these stories, and it's, you know, they call it slash. And it's all like the male characters that you know from this movie or this TV show or whatever. And the women write about these incredibly sexual situations between the two. I really feel from what I've found that the majority of it is written by women. Now I don't go for that myself. It's just kind of, if you read fan fiction, it's really hard to avoid. I really love the two characters in the movie Inception, Arthur and Ariadne. And so I go around looking for fan fiction with the two of them together. Yay. There is so much more fan fiction about Arthur and Eames. That was Tom Hardy's character. They're the most popular character for people to write fan fiction about in that. So it
Never
definitely
Kirk and Spock.
Lots of Kirk and Spock. I've been watching episodes of Supernatural lately, which is, I'm just in the first season, and it really hasn't gotten up yet. But it's the Winchester brothers. They're both two very good-looking guys, I will admit. But there's a thing out there called Wincest, and they get the two of them, you know, their stories, getting the two of them together. God. And it's amazing. And then you start looking at some of the fan art. Oh my God.
Wow. I can wander through some of the slash fan fiction. The fan art is just too much for me. I can't.
Let me ask you, have you
mature filter turned off at work if I go into DeviantArt, because God knows what might come up.
have you ever heard of a story called Gin Shikin?
No.
You should give that a try.
Is that because you were talking about homosexual characters and everything? What is it? Is it Bishonen? Is that what it called in manga?
Bishonen literally means beautiful Bishonen. Men.
Yes, exactly. That's kind of the same sort of thing. They're definitely objectifying these dudes, and they're all very pretty, and you know. So.
Gin Shikin is. It's actually kind of an interesting story. It's about an art college where there is a club that does nothing but sit around and watch anime all day and criticize it. And they call themselves the Society for the Study of Modern Visual Culture.
Uh-huh.
But it's really just an excuse to sit around and watch anime all day or build models or whatever. But the first season sort of sets up a lot of the characterizations of it, but the second season has a very interesting arc featuring one of the female members of the group who writes and draws her own slash manga.
Right.
And then they go to the big Tokyo comic convention, and they try to sell their own books that they've made themselves. And they come, they end up selling a couple of books to a couple of female foreigners who are really into it. They call right. it the actual word it turns homosexual is what they call it, yaoi.
And yes, I've heard of yaoi. I've heard of yaoi.
Yaoi. Yep. And
that's the noise they make, right?
I assume. I'm glad I have the pronunciation for that now. Yeah,
so so it gets this, you know, as a viewer, as a male viewer especially, it gets a little creepy watching women critique this stuff because they get really explicit in the show. I haven't read the full manga, but in the show, it gets even really explicitly critical and a little uncomfortable as a dude to watch where they talk about where these women talk to the author about how much they love the fact that the sperm is splooging all over another dude's face.
Wow.
Yipe. I think you bring up a
really,
good point, though.
I really love the way you draw that.
I think you bring up a good point, though. I mean, here we are talking about how it's not necessarily the greatest thing in the world to objectify women and don't be creepy and all this kind of stuff. I mean, honestly, you can say the same thing about women and male fans. I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of stories of very good-looking male celebrities, and their fans feel like they have every right to just touch them because, you know, oh, I love you so much. Here, let me paw at you. Nathan Fillion's told stories about people grabbing his ass all the time. And I'm like, mind you, it would be tempting not to. But, you know, it's just, yeah, I don't, it's true that we can't just always assume that it's the guys always creating the problem. I mean, there's a little bit of that going over on the women's side, too. Yeah, so
I have actually had my ass grabbed by somebody, not my wife.
What?
You said you'd never talk about that.
Not you either. We do it all the time. But, I have my ass grabbed by another woman, and to be honest, my first reaction was to turn around and grab her tits, but I exercised restraint. So
see, the thing is, she would just get a talking to. If you grabbed her tits, you'd probably get, I don't know, if her boyfriend was there, yeah, you'd get arrested, all this kind of stuff. So it's definitely a double standard going on there.
We had this discussion at work based on something on the that we listened to on the radio. They were asking about the fact that, you know, you've got, you know, the woman, and she's really furious, and she storms into a bar, and she smacks the shit out of somebody, some guy that she's angry with. Is it okay for the guy to hit her back if she hit him first? And that's a real loaded question, because a guy, you know, can't actually say yes, because that makes him a dick, even though he's as unfair as it is. But we actually asked my coworker about that, a guy. He was the only guy in the room, and we decided to mess with him and said, you know, if a woman came up and smacked the shit out of your face, would you hit her back? And he said, no, but I would shake a bitch. And I just thought that was the best reaction. But it's there is a kind of annoying double standard in something like that, because, you know, guys can't hit a woman because, you know, they're supposed to control themselves. But women are given a pass at that sort of thing because they're emotional and they can't help themselves.
Like, you just like said that. The one word that always sets you right off. Oh, don't be emotional. I will cut you.
I once saw an old animated Fantastic Four, one of the really old Hanna-Barbera ones from like the 60s or whatever. And I forget which character did this. It was either Alicia or Sue. I don't know which one it was, but they did something. And they actually had the Ben Grimm character go, "Isn't that just like a woman?" I was like, oh my God, you didn't actually say that in a cartoon. Come on, man.
That's funny.
So angry.
Nobody likes to be dismissed. So any of that whole emotional thing when you deliver it to a woman, she's just being emotional. It's just basically nothing about their argument will have to stand up on its merit anymore. It's just, she's being, just her emotions are getting the better of her.
That's funny.
Which is always paradoxically the time when I most want to kill someone. So.
You're just being emotional.
What was that great quote on Facebook? It said, telling an already angry woman to calm down works about as well as baptizing a cat.
I agree with that. That's one of the things that will set me off like nothing else when somebody says, when I'm already obviously angry about something and they go, now don't get mad. Oh,
calm down.
Well, all righty. Well, I think guys got anything else you want to throw at these two, or should we go on to our little fun bit at the end?
I think we ran the gamut tonight. I'd like to revisit this though.
So yeah.
We've covered some nice, uncomfortable positions.
Yeah, we have. Positions. Yeah, that's an interesting coin of phrase.
That's what she said.
You know, it's funny because the very first podcast I did with the Comic Issues guys, it was really the same thing. We were talking about women in the culture and everything, and it was very, very fun. But I did sort of want to emphasize, it's like, but just because we're women, we don't always have to talk about female issues. Let's talk about comic books.
Yeah. There you go.
Let's do that.
All right. Well, Rando came up with a little fun thing we could do to end this with. So take it away, Rando.
Okay. I am rampantly stealing from another podcast. So what I've decided to do is just have a little fun little geek quiz, in which I'm going to ask the participants in turn. I'm going to give them a term, and they are going to tell me, if they can, if that term refers to a Star Wars planet, a Star Trek character's name, or an alien species from the Marvel Universe.
This is interesting.
Yeah, I like this. This should be. I have a smattering of knowledge about each of those things, so yeah, I'll be interested to see if I actually recognize something.
Okay, so I'm going to ask. Everybody's participating, except me.
Right. Okay.
All right. I'm just going to go down the order that I've written down on the piece of paper here to keep score.
Okay.
So,
like, are we supposed to ring a bell or something, or what are we going to do?
No, I'm just going to ask each one of you in turn, so there's no sound effects involved here.
Nobody jumping up saying, I know this, darn. I know this.
I know. Me.
No one allowed
ding, ding, ding.
No one allowed to steal, but everyone's allowed to ridicule.
Okay. Okay, good. I like that plan.
Okay. All right. So are we ready?
Yep.
Ready.
Okay, here we go. Poncho.
Ladies first. Ask one of those two.
Oh, okay.
That's brave.
Yeah. Oh. Ladies first.
All right.
You're our guest.
Don't get emotional, ladies. Just
our rage.
Don't get emotional, Poncho.
So much hate.
Okay. All right. Okay. All right. All right. Okay. Catherine.
Yes.
Zephram Cochran.
That is a Star Trek character name.
Very good.
That was right. All right.
That is a check for you.
Woohoo.
Okay. Elizabeth.
Yes.
Kashyyyk.
That is a Star Wars planet.
Very good.
It's the Wookiee planet, isn't it?
What'd you say? Planet. Yes, when the Return of the Jedi would have been so much better if they'd taken place on that planet instead of Endor.
Oh, God. There's only so many Peter Mayhews they could run around.
That's true.
Okay, now, Poncho.
Yes.
Let's see. Kalis.
Kalis. I'm going to say Star Trek character.
Very good.
Okay.
Sweet.
Wild ass guess there.
Oh, great. I'll be the first one to get one wrong.
No pressure.
And now, no pressure. Lefty. Kree.
The company.
What were my choices again?
Star Wars planet, Star Trek character, Marvel Universe alien species.
Oh, that's Marvel Universe alien species.
Lobbed you an easy one there.
Yeah, that was an easy one. I actually knew that one.
Ooh. I wouldn't have known that if I hadn't listened to the Comic Issues podcast. Yeah. Bit before my time, unfortunately.
Okay, Catherine.
Okay.
How about Bespin?
Oh, that is a Star Wars planet.
All righty.
Yep.
Well, technically, it's a Star Wars Bespin. It's the cloud planet, right?
Was it exactly the planet the Cloud City was on?
Yeah,
exactly.
I was just wondering.
Yeah.
There's so many Star Wars planets that it's not really a planet; it's actually a moon of a larger gas planet. But
there we
couldn't remember what that one was.
Okay, Elizabeth.
Yes.
Shi'ar.
That is. Hang on. Isn't that an alien from Marvel Universe?
Yes, it is.
Oh.
Sweet. Which one is that one from? I know that name.
X-Men.
And is that the same Professor X's girlfriend? Was she a Shi'ar, or is that somebody else?
Yes, she was Shi'ar, and it was the Shi'ar alien technology that they used to help build the Danger Room.
That's what it was. Okay. Yeah, Deathbird was a Shi'ar as well, right? So
I don't remember, but I think you're right.
Yeah. Sister. Yeah, anyway. Cool.
All right, Poncho.
Okay.
Yavin,
that's a Star Wars planet.
Yes. Yay.
Which one was that? Which one was Yavin?
That was episode 4.
That was where the Rebel base was.
Ah, thank you.
Yeah.
So I think the Rebel base was on a moon of the planet Yavin.
Yes, you're right.
Once again, not on it, but on the moon. That was what the Death Star was going to blow up near the end
of
the movie.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, Lefty.
Yeah.
Elan.
Well, this is a tough one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'll go with Star Wars.
No, that was Marvel Universe.
Really?
Yes, Elan were featured in the Fantastic Four in the Infant Terrible story.
Interesting.
I think Fantastic Four would be the one that I know the least about.
Me too.
Mm. Probably because I didn't like the movie.
But I think they're the...
I've purged any information I gained from my brain after that.
I think that was the smart call.
Okay. Catherine, you're up.
All right.
So let's go with Popupian.
Oh, my. Popupian. Marvel alien.
You're right.
Oh, wow.
Boy, that was a wild-ass guess, wasn't it?
Way to go.
Anybody remember Impy the Impossible Man?
No.
Yes,
no.
I do. That was a Fantastic Four too, right?
He was a pop-up.
So I was about to say, it seems like most of the alien species from Marvel are from the Fantastic Four.
He's their version of Mr. Mixelplex.
Oh, God.
Yeah, he was, actually.
Annoying, useless character all around.
Is that kind of like Batmite from the old Batman cartoon?
Yeah, pretty much.
Slightly more powerful, I guess.
Yeah, Batmite couldn't really do anything except be annoying.
Okay. Lisbeth?
Yes.
Bitor.
I'm going to guess and say it's a Star Trek character.
And you would be right.
Yeah. It's probably got a hyphen in it, doesn't it?
It's an apostrophe, actually.
Bajoran. Must be Bajoran.
Klingon.
Oh, okay.
Klingon from the Next Generation. She was one of the two Klingon sisters, Lursa and Bitor.
That's right. Sweet, but they were awfully fond of putting apostrophes in alien names. So
they were.
Speaking of objectifying women, those two Klingon chicks had their tits shoved practically up their nose in their
really did. And then when the bad guys shoot a photon torpedo at you, what you have to do is sit and stare at the screen and watch it come at you. Don't take evasive action or anything.
Of course not.
That would be counterproductive.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It would be less dramatic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You people are scaring me.
Okay. Poncho.
Yep.
Gowron? Yeah.
I'm going to say that's a Star Trek character.
And you would also be right, sir.
Oh, who was that?
He was the commander of the Klingon High Council in the Next Generation.
Okay, yeah.
Oh,
yep. Yep.
Oh, nice.
Yep. The guy with the bug eyes, the big poppy eyes.
Yeah, he did have giant ass eyes. Freaky. All right, Lefty.
Sure.
You're the only one who's screwed up so far.
You took all the pressure off.
Yeah, there you go.
I'll lob you an easy one. How about Hoth?
Oh, that's Star Wars.
Okay.
That's almost insultingly easy. You'll lob me an easy one next time?
Trust me, between that one and there's only been like two other ones, I didn't even know what the hell y'all were talking about.
We'd be revoking your geek card if you did.
But it's okay. You got Hoth, so that's fine. That's all right.
Okay, that's great. Thanks.
Yeah, if I were to say Tatooine and you were like, I have no idea, I'd be like, out! Get out!
All right, Catherine.
All right.
Miri.
I know this one.
Star Trek character name?
Yep. from an episode of the same name.
Yep.
Which what was the episode?
It was an original series episode where they land on this planet where all the adults have died, and it's just these kids. And all the adults get some sort of sickness where their skin turns black.
I need to sit down and watch some of the original Generation episodes. I think I've seen a lot of them, but just, you know, I don't know nearly as much about them. Yeah. Let's say Doctor Who or anything.
It's true.
Oh, you should have thrown that one in here, Randy.
Yeah.
You should have thrown in a Doctor Who monster names.
Yeah.
See, I actually thought that would be too easy.
Yeah, I was about to say, crowd, probably.
You say something like the nesting consciousness, and I'm like, Doctor Who. Yeah. Too easy.
Yep. Okay. This one's probably be easy. Zenlavian.
Is this for me, or who's this for?
Elizabeth.
My turn?
Yeah. Yep.
Say it again one more time, please.
Zenlavian.
Wow. I'm actually going to have to guess on this one. It's not a Star Wars planet. I'm going to say it's alien, Marvel alien.
And you'd be right.
Ah, awesome. Where from?
Zenla is Norrin Rad, otherwise known as the Silver Surfer.
Again, from Fantastic Four.
I sense a theme here.
Yeah, me too.
Don't get too cocky.
Well, it's not exactly a theme that's going to help me, since I don't know anything about the Fantastic Four. But
all right, Poncho.
Yep, hit me.
This one, I know I'm going to pronounce wrong, but it's got like no vowels.
Oh, great.
Fulbdibby.
Wow. Huh.
That's a Macklemore lyric.
So. some of H.P. Lovecraft's Cthulhu. Talk.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Star Trek character.
Oh, busted. It's Marvel Universe.
Oh, alien. Let me guess, Fantastic Four.
Yes, you'd be right. You don't get a point for that, though.
Damn. Okay.
That was my second choice. I figured that was the name of some Vulcan that, you know, they have their names can be pretty hard to pronounce, too.
Okay, Lefty.
Yeah.
I got to pick and choose now. I'm running out of options. How about Elan? Different from the first one.
Let's see. Elan. I'm just going to say Star Trek.
Oh.
I have no clue.
And your guess is correct.
Ah.
From the original the original series, Elan of Troyes.
There you go. Can't claim any knowledge, just total guess.
What's the old saying? I'd rather be lucky than smart.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right, Catherine.
All right.
Corellia.
That would be a Star Wars planet?
Correct.
That's Corellian.
Corellia.
Yeah, the Millennium Falcon came from there, right? It's a Corellian smuggling ship or something.
I think that might be it, actually. Was that where Han Solo was from?
Might be.
Yeah.
All righty. Lisbeth.
All right.
Cillan.
Ooh, say again?
Cillan.
Can you spell that, please?
Can you say it in a sentence?
Use it in a sentence, yeah.
How do you spell it?
T-S-I-L-I-N.
Oh, I'm actually – hang on a second. I'm not Googling it. I'm actually spelling it out.
Everybody uses Google, just lost all their points.
I have no earthly idea. I am going to say it's a Star Trek character name.
Oh, busted.
Oh, phooey. What is it?
Universe alien.
Yeah?
Can you guess
from? Fantastic Four?
Amazing Spider-Man.
Oh, threw me a curveball. Well, I'm impressed.
Okay. Poncho.
Yep.
Damn it. I left all the easy ones. Sarek.
Sarek, that's a Star Trek character.
Yep, you're right.
That was Mr. Spock's father.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, Lefty.
Sure.
Dantooine.
Oh, that's Star Wars.
Okay, all right. We'll make that the last one.
Okay.
Because I'm running out.
Okay.
That was fun, though.
That was really fun. I like that.
Okay, well, here's the fun part. The winner is Catherine.
Yay!
Something. Yeah. Woo!
So there you have
it. What did she win? What did she win?
She wins the title of Queen Geek, and she's around the house all day.
Queen Geek for the podcast.
Yes, this podcast is suitable for framing.
See, right. This is her weekend. Yesterday, she won $1 and a scratch-off ticket at the grocery store. The
nice. Oh, nice.
Wow.
How much did the ticket cost?
$1.
And like breaking even.
Yeah.
There we go. Unfortunately, Poncho also bought $1 ticket and did not win something. So we haven't broken even yet, but we're working on it.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, no.
So you and I still pick up pennies on the ground, so I figure we're way ahead on that.
I think so, actually. I'm sure we've risked life and limb to scrabble for a penny in the middle of a road at some point.
Yep. Yes, you have. I have personal witness to this.
Same. And Kevin and I were always – it's like our little competition anytime we're around each other. You know, one of us will see a penny on the ground, pick it up, look at the other. I'm one ahead, you know, and so we're going 1-2, it's 3-4. So then Poncho finds a fucking dollar. Not fair.
Hey, what can you do? All right. Well, this has been fun. We'll have to have you two on again sometime.
That was very fun. Really liked it. It was very neat.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you all for joining us. We really appreciate it. And anybody who's listening other than the two of you, you can drop
us. They're out there.
You can find us on iTunes at – on Facebook and at gmail.com. Just search for Midlife Crisis Task Force.
Yep. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Cool. Bye.
Bye, guys.
Toodles. All right.
See you later.